ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11. And will be texts 13, 14, 15, 16, and part of 17. Chapter 11 is Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. He's left Hastinapur with scenes of great separation from Krishna. And as he's entering Dwarka, the great anguish and pain of separation from Krishna is being mitigated from the residents of Dwarka by again meeting some very beautiful sections of Krishna's blowing upon his conch shell, and the citizens of Dwarka, as if coming back to life from dead, they hear the sound of Krishna's conch. They've heard that Krishna is coming, and that has just intensified their anticipation, and it's taking forever. Krishna is not coming, and then they hear the sound. So they start running to greet Krishna. And some are very busy arranging for a reception for Krishna, just wanting to please him by auspicious arrangements in the city of Dwarka. So some very, very beautiful prayers are being expressed in glorification of Krishna. Very appropriate prayers, beautiful prayers. And now Krishna is just entering into the city itself. That was out in the suburbs or something. Now coming into the city. And the opulence of the city of Dwarka is described. Because Dwarka, of the three primary places of Krishna's pastimes, Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. In fact, Goloka Vrindavan has those same divisions. Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. So Dwarka manifests the fullness of the Lord's opulence. There's a nice discussion, very nice discussion in Chaitanya Charitamrita between two devotees of Lord Chaitanya, one who favors Dwarka and another who favors Vrindavan. Which place is more opulent? And the devotee, it's in Lord Jagannath's procession, coming onto the Rath cart, and all the splendor and spectacle, and one devotee says, just see the opulence of my Lord Jagannath, the king of Purushottam Kshetra. So they turn to another one of the devotees that favors Vrindavan. What do you think of that? So he speaks about the opulence of Vrindavan. And the way he speaks about the opulence of Vrindavan, it just leaves laughter at the end, because Krishna's opulence in Vrindavan is superlative. But it's transcendental fun between the two moods of love for Krishna. The last verse before where we're going to begin. The natural opulences are the opulences of Dwarka. Not like the city of Ravan, where everything is made of gold. But here, the description is different, and everything is of natural opulence. Natural opulences of all seasons at the same time. In most places, that's in season, there's mango season or papaya season or season when flowers come on the trees or season for this and season for that. But in Dwarka, it was simultaneously of all seasons, opulences. Hermitages, orchards, flower garlands, parks, and reservoirs of water breeding lotus flowers. And Prabhupada was speaking about very wealthy people, when they have the means to do so, they make their residences in places that are surrounded by those natural beauties. Well, the people who are working in the industries that is earning the wealth for them, they're living in slums and, you know, beaten down or unattractive urban congested places. So what to speak of the opulence of Dwarka, one can't even imagine. And these natural settings enhance the finer instincts of the human being naturally. Prabhupada calls the other Ugra karma. You've heard that term before. Ugra, like Ugra Nishinga. Ugra Nishinga. So, Ugra karma, pungent activities. You know, factories, mines, manufacturing places. Ugra karma. He's called it here a dungeon of demons. Was not very appreciative of the so-called opulence of modern civilization. But Dwarka was a different, it was a city, but it was a different type. The children that attended the Gita camp this summer in Chicago discuss the opulences of the absolute chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and they studied the opulences of Dwarka and made a city of Dwarka, three-dimensional city of Dwarka. So they mainly studied Krishna book, but here it's also described very nicely. The city gateway, Gopuram, Gopura Dwara. The household doors and festooned arches along the roads were all nicely decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. Again, Prabhupada is emphasizing in the purport, all from nature's gifts, and displaying such nature's gifts, coconut palms, plantain trees, mango trees, mango leaves strung on thread, and flags, Pataka. That's what Jai Pataka's name means, victory flag. Flags. Flags, Prabhupada says here, painted with a picture of either Garuda or Hanuman. Why is that? Because they're two great devotees of the Lord. And Krishna's chariot is the system of the Kshatriyas. They would have a flag, just like when Ram and Lakshman saw the army that was coming their way through the forest. Lakshman was gone, was sent to go see who was coming, and he saw the flag on the top of the chariots. I forget now, a coconut tree or something like that. A tree, a certain kind of tree, was on their flag. So, that's Dasaras. So the flag would indicate which king. So Hanuman was on the flag of Arjuna's chariot, and Garuda was on the flag of Krishna's chariot. And Parikshit Maharaj had the flag of a lion. And Prabhupada said, it's not an ordinary lion. It's the king of the jungle, Mrugendra, or Narasingha. So flags would indicate who, and their color of their horses would indicate who. So here, flags are for glorification of the Lord, because by glorifying the devotee of the Lord is automatically glorified. Or the servitor of the master is paid more respects for the satisfaction of the Lord. Krishna likes it even more that we glorify his devotee than we glorify him. Next, the highways, the subways, very advanced city. What drew those subway vehicles, who knows, but highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. Might have looked like a mess. Just strew seeds and vegetables and fruits, unbroken seeds and fruits all everywhere. But it was considered, and Prabhupada writes, till today, considered auspicious. Unbroken seeds of grains or unbroken fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious, and they are still so used by Hindus in general on festive days. So the whole city, in the marketplaces, along the lanes, on the highways and in the subways, these marks of auspiciousness were placed. First business, thoroughly cleansing. Second business, sprinkling scented water. Prabhupada is even specific. Rose water or Kayora water. Doesn't say what that is. Anybody know what that is? Some kind of a flower?
The leaves will have thorns.
Thorns on the leaves.
And the flower is inside the bushy leaves.
Okay.
And it's very fragile.
So the roads were sprinkled with rose water and Kayora water. After thoroughly cleansed, then moistened, then unbroken grains, unbroken fruits, and so on. all to welcome the Lord by creating auspiciousness. But not only the public places, the private places. In each and every door of the residential houses, auspicious things. So here's the auspicious things list. Like curd, unbroken fruits, sugar cane, and full water pots with articles for worship, incense, and candles were all displayed. I'll read. Purport. The process of reception according to Vedic rites is not at all dry. The reception was made not simply by decorating the roads and streets, as above mentioned, but by worshipping the Lord with requisite ingredients, like incense, lamps, flowers, sweets, fruits, and other palatable eatables, according to one's capacity. All were offerings to the Lord, and the remnants of the foodstuff were distributed amongst the gathering citizens. So, it was not like a dry reception of these modern days. Each and every house was ready to receive the Lord. That was the thought. Maybe the Lord will come and visit our home. Mm-hmm. Let's make a very inviting reception for him, to encourage him to come to our home. And even if he just walks by, that's our service, our gesture of offering unto him. And then Prabhupada concludes that the distribution of foodstuffs or prasadam is necessary in any function. That this function is not complete without it. As Prabhupada spoke that way about deity worship. Deity worship is not complete without prasadam distribution. And that's the way of Vedic culture. It's not just, you know, feeding hungry people and that's nice. The deeper thought is the prasad of the Lord. This honoring the Lord and distributing the mercy of the Lord is the idea. Then the narration goes into the personalities, by name, personalities who came to greet the Lord. On hearing that the most dear Krishna was approaching Dwarka Dham, the magnanimous Vasudev, Akrura, Ugrasena, Balaram, Pradyumna, Charudeshna, and Samba, the son of Jambavati, all extremely happy, abandoned, resting, sitting, and dining. Whatever they were doing, that's inconsequential. Let's go meet Krishna with great enthusiasm. So, we're now going to have a who's who session. And a little Mahabharat katha, so some of you who are struggling to stay awake will be able to stay awake a little more easily. Because it's story time now. So the first person that's discussed is Vasudev. So I'll just read and then break and elaborate a little bit the different points. And if there's something that you hear that you'd like some further elaboration, you can interrupt. You know, what about this, what about that? Son of King Shurasena, Vasudev was the son of King Shurasena. I just happen to have the family tree, but I don't have a projector, but I can hold it up. Here's Over here is the Vrishni dynasty that goes over here, and over here is the Andaka dynasty. So we hear the Vrishni and Andaka dynasties. So they're related because there were two brothers, Vrishni and Andaka. There were sons of Satvata, so Vrishni and Andaka dynasty. And over here in the Andaka dynasty, there's Andaka. Look at that. And then he had descendants, nine in lineage. Then Ahuka, who had two sons, Ugrasena and Devaka. So that's the Andaka dynasty. And Devaka had nine daughters, one of whom was Devaki. So Devaki, who is the daughter of Devaka, married, who did Devaki marry? Vasudev, that's what we're talking about. Yeah, okay, Vasudev. Vasudev. Vasudev is over on this side, on the Vrishni dynasty side. And Vasudev's way down here. Vasudev, we just heard he's the son of, or one of the sons of Shurasena. Now look at this. Kunti is also a daughter of Shurasena. So that means Kunti and Vasudev are brother and sister, right? Brother and sister. And that's how Krishna is related, because Krishna was the son of Vasudev, and there's Queen Kunti, Aunt Kunti, and Kunti's children were the Pandavas, and so they're cousins, they're first cousins. You have any first cousins? Yeah. So like that, they're first cousins. And that's over here on the Vrishni dynasty side, so there's Shurasena. Shurasena. And look at this. Nanda Maharaj was also in the line of Shurasena. There in between was Parjanya and then Nanda. So Nanda and Vasudev were good friends. In fact, they were related. In fact, they were first cousins. And Kunti. So there's this, on this side, the Vrishni dynasty, because we're going to hear these names a bunch of times, so just let me pull the little map out one more time. But way over here, on the direct sons of Vrishni, who is the other one over on this side? Andaka. Then over here is Vrishni. So Vrishni had two sons, Shvapalka and Chitrarath. We're going to hear about Shvapalka. He was the father of Akrura. If you remember from the Shamantaka Jewel story, you remember that one? Oh. Okay. Shamantaka Jewel story. You remember the Shamantaka Jewel story? I'm looking. Okay. Good. So, Shvapalka was these Vrishni and Andaka dynasties, they're all in this family, is what Krishna said when the demigods went to pray at the shore of the Milk Ocean. Please come and relieve Mother Earth from the overburdening population of demoniac kings. And Lord Vishnu said to Brahma, tell the demigods, soon I will appear. They can take their birth in the Andaka and Vrishni dynasty, both family trees, so they can be my relatives and they can assist me in my pastimes. So some of those personalities are the Lord's eternal associates, and some are demigods who have taken birth, and they just get to witness Krishna's pastimes and assist in Krishna's pastimes, serve him directly. Akura was, well, we're going to read about Akura. Akura, over here, the son of Shvapalka, he married the daughter of Ugrasena. So Ugrasena's name, besides Ugrasena, he was known as Ahuka. His father was Ahuka, and he was known as Ahuka. Very confusing. I get confused at least. So, Akura and his father-in-law weren't on good terms. Prabhupada writes. But they were both good. They were both nice devotees. So sometimes it even happens that nice devotees, I mean, Akura, such a nice devotee, not in good terms with his father-in-law. So those, if anybody has that problem, don't worry about it. Even at Krishna's time, that was going on. So, Vasudeva, king of Shurasena, husband of Devaki, and father of Lord Krishna. He's the brother of Kunti. Brother of Kunti means, so Kunti was also daughter of Shurasena. And Vasudeva was the father of Subhadra. Sometimes people ask, we don't hear so much about Subhadra. Who are the parents of Subhadra? Vasudeva and Devaki were the parents of Subhadra. So when when Krishna arranged for the whole Yadu dynasty to shift from Mathura to Dwarka, right? He arranged for that. So he had Vishwakarma build the whole city while Balaram was holding off the two armies of Jarasandha and Kalyavana. Krishna took the whole Yadu dynasty and settled them in Dwarka and came back to fight. So Subhadra, after some times, the sister of Balaram and Krishna, Subhadra was living in Dwarka at the time when Arjun came, when he was on pilgrimage, and so forth, and Arjun wanted to marry Subhadra. Krishna favored that, but Balaram didn't favor that. That's discussed a little bit under Balaram. What did Balaram want? Who should Subhadra marry? Duryodhan. How terrible. And that's what Subhadra thought. Forget it. So Krishna made an arrangement where Arjuna could kidnap Subhadra in a Kshatriya-styled marriage. And Balaram, it's mentioned, I'll read what it says about Balaram on that. When Subhadra was kidnapped by Arjuna by the organized plan of Sri Krishna, Baladeva was very angry with Arjuna and wanted to kill him at once. Sri Krishna, for the sake of his dear friend, fell at the feet of Lord Baladeva and implored him not to be so angry. Actually, he said many interesting things. Sri Baladeva was thus pacified. Okay, so, back to Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the father of Subhadra. Subhadra was married with her cousin, Arjuna, and this system is still prevalent in some parts of India. There's certain ways where it's not to be done, and some ways where it is to be done. So this was one of it is to be done ways. Vasudeva, remember the family tree over here? Vasudeva's over here, and Ugrasena is over here on the Andaka side. Ugrasena was king, and Ugrasena appointed Vasudeva as his chief minister. Vasudeva, we heard yesterday morning, Vasudeva was a minister type of Kshatriya as opposed to the ruling. He just advised those that rule, but that was also a Kshatriya function. He was more on the brahminical side of the Kshatriya function. He was the minister of Ugrasena. That was his strength. He was recognized. And then later, he married. He initially was minister without having been married to Devaki. And when he was married to Devaki, he didn't just marry Devaki. There was 8 daughters of Ugrasena's brother. Remember the family tree? Devaka and Ugrasena were brothers. But Devaka's daughters, headed by Devaki, were all at once. You know, when Kamsa was ready to kill Devaki, was all the other sisters, who were also his queens, were Vasudeva's queens, were right there. Kamsa was quite a mean guy. Kamsa was his brother-in-law. So Vasudeva married Devaki, and Kamsa was his brother-in-law. So if you have some brothers-in-laws that are, you don't get along with, just think your fortune. It's not Kamsa. Hare Krishna. Vasudeva accepted voluntary imprisonment by Kamsa on mutual agreement to deliver the 8th son of Devaki. This was foiled by the will of Krishna. We know how that happened. As maternal uncle of the Pandavas, maternal uncle, so that means Kunti's brother, Vasudeva and Kunti were brothers and sister, so as maternal uncle, listen to this. He was involved with the purificatory processes of the Pandavas. What are the purificatory processes? Sangskaras. And the birth ceremony of the Pandavas was performed or overseen by Vasudeva, which is very interesting. Because the description in Mahabharata, we'll read the next sentence. He sent for the priest Kasyapa at the Shatasringa Parvat, and he executed the functions. So he was, the description in Mahabharata was, or is, that Pandu, he was the king, and normally kings rule at their palace, the, you know, like the headquarters, the royal palace. But Pandu had a liking of being in the forest. So he didn't just go to the forest. Think of the geography of India, northern India, where Delhi is, where Hastinapur was, the capital city. He went traveling with his two queens, Madri and Kunti, way to the north. They went to this Shatasringha Parvat area, which is described in Mahabharata in this way. They passed over the Himalayas and continued in a northerly direction, went past Gandamanana mountain, went past the place where King Indradumna performed his austerities to the place called Hamsa Kuta, and then settled in this Shata Sringha Parvat area. Shata Sringha means 100 peaks. So, big mountainous area. That's where he no cell phones, no emails, peaceful. To stay here. And that's where the Pandavas were born. And somehow Vasudeva made it all the way to that place. And when it was time for the birth ceremony, Vasudeva made the arrangements. And this Shata Sringha is also mentioned as the place where Pandu died, and the funeral of Pandu was performed. Again, by the sages of the Shata Sringha area, where it was decided that by the sages that Kunti should remain and take care of the children, Madri was given permission to enter into the funeral pyre of Pandu. And so from that position, this Shatasringha area, is when the five boys, along with Kunti, returned back to the capital to be received by Dhritarashtra and his 100 sons. So Vasudeva was involved in the purificatory processes of the Pandavas. When Krishna appeared within the bars of Kamsa's prison, Krishna was transferred by Vasudeva to the house of Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Krishna, at Gokul. Then it describes that Krishna's and Balaram's disappearance, these sons of Vasudeva, they disappeared before Vasudeva did. So Vasudeva was quite old. And when Vasudeva's death took place, or disappearance took place, it was Arjuna who took care of the funeral of Vasudeva. So this is Mahabharata time within the Bhagavatam, because Prabhupada goes into the biographies of these personalities. So next was Akura. Akura was such a good minister that when Kamsa wanted to plot to kill Krishna, it was the best of his ministers, Akura. Oh, Uncle Akura, you're the one, you're the best. Why don't you, you're capable. Bring Krishna here so I can kill him. And describe the whole plan. And Akura's reply was, I'll gladly go bring Krishna, and by so doing, you're inviting your own death. Mark my words. I'm your minister, I'm only speaking for your welfare. You're inviting your own death to come and destroy you. So he went. So he was expert in being a minister, but it's mentioned here, he was also the commander-in-chief of the Vrishni dynasty. So you remember from that family tree over on this side is the Vrishni side. Shvapalka was his father, and so he was elder and senior and very respected. So he was the commander-in-chief of the army and the first-class minister. He was very qualified for her. And a great devotee of Krishna. And Akura achieved perfection in devotional service by what process of devotional service? Children? There's 9 processes of devotional service. Akura achieved perfection through one of those 9 processes of devotional service. Which one was it? When Krishna, let's see if you can remember. Akura was sent by Kamsa to go bring Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura, right? So he got on his chariot and he was driving his chariot to go to Vrindavan to get Krishna. And as he was going, what was he doing? What was he doing? Huh? He was remembering Krishna. But he was remembering Krishna through the medium of prayer. He was thinking in his mind, when I meet Krishna, this is what I'll do. I'll speak to Krishna this way. And he was just offering beautiful, beautiful, beautiful prayers. It's a wonderful chapter. So when you go to Vrindavan, one day you'll all go to Vrindavan, You can take that chapter of Krishna book with you, and as you're entering Vrindavan, you can read that chapter, the prayers of Akrura, by which Akrura achieved perfection through the process of bandhana, or prayer. So he was a great devotee of Krishna. And his wife was Sutani, who was the daughter of Ahuka. Ahuka is the same as Ugrasena. And when Arjun kidnapped Subhadra, and Balaram became really angry, it wasn't only Krishna that took the side of Arjuna, but Akrura also, commander-in-chief of the Rishni dynasty and great minister. He was on Krishna's side, on Krishna and Arjuna's side. That's a good side to be on. Both of them, after Balaram accepted Krishna's plan, because Balaram just wants to serve Krishna, then they, both Krishna and Akrura, went to bring Arjuna back, rather than running away with his chariot, bring him back and presented. In fact, this was Balaram's proposal. Excuse me, Krishna's proposal to Balaram. We shouldn't go and chase him and punish him. We should bring him rich, lavish gifts because this is wonderful. And Balaram was, what? Yes, it's glorious, this kind of marriage in Kshatriya family. It's very respectable. This is very good. And the Pandava dynasty, over on that side, the Andaka dynasty, and over on this side, the Vrishni dynasty, oh, it's very auspicious. Wonderful. This marriage should take place at once. Let's give him abundant gifts. So Krishna gave gifts to Arjuna. And Akrura gave gifts to Arjuna as a sign of respect and appreciation. When Uttara was married with Abhimanyu, what was the situation? Akrura was there at that marriage ceremony. What was the situation? The Pandavas were in exile for 12 years. In the 13th year, they were to be incognito. Like, you know, no one can know where they are. So they disguised themselves. It was all Yudhisthira's plan. As not Pandavas and not royal family, but other types of people. And Arjuna took the position of the dance instructor. Although he's like powerful Arjuna, he took the position of, you know, the word that's used in the Mahabharata is eunuch. It's like a transvestite. He's just like an asexual person. And he was a dance instructor. So when the king found out, this isn't just, you know, dance instructor, this is Arjuna. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to reciprocate with you. I'd like to offer my daughter in marriage. And Arjuna said, I can't marry your daughter. She's my student. That would be, it's just, it can't happen. It's not appropriate. It's not Vedic. But I have another idea. I have a son. And he could marry your daughter. He's of marriageable age and older than your daughter. So his name is Abhimanyu. And so in this way, Abhimanyu was married to Uttara. And shortly after their marriage, a child was conceived, and then the battle took place, and Abhimanyu was in the battle, and Abhimanyu was mercilessly killed. Unfairly and mercilessly killed. Just 16 years old. So, Akura was present with Abhimanyu, who was the son of Subhadra, was married. So Abhimanyu was the son of Subhadra and Arjuna. He was present. Okay, we're just going to do two more of these great personalities that all came to receive Krishna. As great as they were devotees of Krishna. Ugrasena was one of the powerful kings of the Andaka dynasty and cousin of Maharaj Kunti Bhoja. Cousin of Kunti Bhoja. His other name is Ahuka. His minister was already mentioned. Who was his minister? Vasudeva, right. Good. And his son of Ugrasena? Kamsa. There's a description, I forget where it's from. It might be from one of Rupa Goswami's writings. How was it that such a qualified person as Ugrasena had such a terrible son as Kamsa? So the description goes, maybe it's from Garga Samhita or something like that. On the marriage day of Ugrasena with his wife Padmavati, oh, this is in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. On the marriage day of Ugrasena with Padmavati, one demon named Drumila manifested a form, an appearance of himself, as if he was Ugrasena. And they were just newly married. She didn't even know exactly, you know, the nature of her husband. Her husband, you know, she mistook Drumila to be her husband, and he was posing himself as her husband. And he was a demon, and his interest was defiling Padmavati, and so from their combination, a son was born, and his name was Kamsa. So inauspicious unions can produce big problems. Like Kamsa level problems. So although he was the son of Ugrasena by family line, there was a special little deal going on. He was a very wicked person. So Ugrasena, the father of Kamsa. This Kamsa imprisoned his father and became king of Mathura. But Krishna and Balaram arranged for Kamsa to be killed, and Ugrasena was replaced on the throne. Something else about Ugrasena is one time later on, Shalva attacked the city, the capital city. And Ugrasena wasn't just, you know, hiding behind his army. He was out in the front line. And he fought valiantly against Shalva and repulsed Shalva's whole army. There's another mention here that once Ugrasena was inquiring from Narada, who is Krishna really? You're a great learned personality. What's the real deal here? Who is Krishna? Then another scene that's repeated a few times in this section is Samba. Samba was the son of Jambavati. We learned about Jambavati in the Shamataka Jewel story. Jambavati was the daughter of Jambavan, and when one of the sons of Krishna and Jambavati was Samba. So the destruction of the Yoda dynasty was Samba. He put a big stone under a cloth that was wrapped around him like a sari, and he and some other young members of the Yadu dynasty came before some brahmanas and said in a high voice, "Can you please tell me which kind of child will be born of me?" As if he was a pregnant woman. And the brahmins immediately could understand they were making fun of them. And we'll tell you that that child that is going to be born of you will be the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. A curse of the Brahmins. So Samba and his friends immediately went to King Agrasena and presented this stone, iron, and said, "This just happened. What do we do?" So Agrasena was entrusted with the iron lump produced from the womb of Samba. Now Samba is a male, so it's not, it was just that incident. He was pretending to be a pregnant woman and spoofing, you know, joking, making fun of the brahmanas. So Ugrasena decided to take the piece of iron, cut it into little pieces, grind it into powder, and distribute it out in the sea on the coast of Dwarka. And then what happened? Anyone? Yes? What happened?
They went
Prabhas, Kshetra, right, they went in pilgrimage, and that those iron powder, iron filings all came washed up by the shore, and there was some, it became part and parcel of the reeds that were growing there. So when the members of the Yadu dynasty had a little party, they had some rice wine, and then they got intoxicated and they took those reeds and started bashing one another and killed one another by Krishna's arrangement to remove the Yadu dynasty from earth. So after distributing the powdered lump of iron, it says here, Ugrasena ordered complete prohibition. Prohibition means no alcohol within the city of Dwarka and his kingdom. So apparently there wasn't, that would sometimes take place even in Dwarka. And the final statement is he received or got salvation after his death. So now one more. These the persons mentioned so far that went to greet Krishna were Vasudev, Akrura, and Ugrasena, now Balaram. Balaram is going to greet Krishna. There's a lot here about Balaram. He is the divine son of Vasudev by his wife Rohini. Rohini. Rohini was one of the wives of Vasudev. So the description goes that when Vasudev was under guard of Kamsa, he was given the facility to be with his wives also. And when Rohini became pregnant, Rohini was sent by Vasudev to Gokul to be in the care of Nanda because he didn't trust Kamsa. So stay, you're my wife, you stay with my dear friend Nanda. So Rohini was pregnant. And then Devaki, with her seventh pregnancy, this is when Krishna arranged for Yogamaya to transfer the child within the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. So in effect, the child that was in the womb of Rohini, it doesn't describe what happened to that child, but it was like the child was removed or was like an, what do you call it, a premature birth, and this other child was placed there, something like that. And so then Balaram became the son of Rohini. So he's known also as Rohini Nandana. Balaram is Rohini Nandana. So Nanda Maharaj is also the foster father of Baladev, along with Krishna. Lord Krishna and Baladev were constant companions from their very childhood, although they were step brothers. In this plenary manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is therefore as good and as powerful as Lord Krishna. He belongs to the Vishnu Tattva, or the principle of Godhead. Baladev attended the Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi along with Sri Krishna. What was that circumstance? Those of you that can remember from the Shyamantaka jewel story, when it was actually the after the Shyamantaka jewel was restored to Satrajit, Krishna and Balaram left Dwarka to go to Hastinapur. For what reason? News had reached them that the Pandavas had been killed or had died in a fire in the house of Lak. Krishna was omniscient. He knew that they hadn't died. But still he went, along with Balaram, to observe the funeral of the Pandavas. So, meanwhile, the Pandavas hadn't died in that fire, but by the arrangement of Vidura, they escaped through a tunnel beneath the home and out the other side of the tunnel. And guess who was waiting in a boat on the other side to take him to the other side of the river? Vidura was waiting. He took him to safety. And so they understood, whoa, we have a pretty nasty cousin here. He wants to kill us. So they disguised themselves. And as they were moving about in disguise, this was when, as brahmanas, there was this word, oh, Draupadi Swayamvar is going to take place. So we're brahmanas. So a group of brahmanas said, let's go to bless the occasion. So the Pandavas went disguised as brahmanas. Now Krishna had already been in Hastinapur, so Krishna was there for the Swayamvar ceremony of Draupadi also. So that's what's being said. Balaram and Krishna were present at the Swayamvar of Draupadi. And we read this about Subhadra's being kidnapped by Arjuna. Balaram became angry. Similarly, he was once very angry at the Kauravas, and he wanted to throw their whole city into the depths of the Yamuna. What was that situation? Oh, Krishna book readers. Remember? Samba. Who was Samba?
Krishna's son.
He's Krishna's son. And who was the mother?
Jambavati.
So Samba had developed an attraction for who? As a potential wife? The daughter of Duryodhan. So he wanted to marry the daughter of Duryodhan. And when they found out, oh, they were really upset. They imprisoned Samba. because he was associating with his daughter, imprisoned him. When Ugrasena found out a member of our dynasty is imprisoned by the Kauravas, gather up the armies, it's battle. This is before the Kurukshetra battle. And Balaram said, no, wait. I've got a relationship with Duryodhan. Let me try. I'll go alone. Maybe the armies can be there, but I'll go meet with Duryodhan and the Kauravas and I'll work it out. So he went to Hastinapur, and the Kauravas, the assembly of the ministers, were sent to receive Balaram. And they came, gave presentations and nice reception, and then they asked, what's brought you here to Hastinapur? He said, I'm glad you've asked. I've come for the marriage of Samba and Duryodhan's daughter. Oh, no! We can't have this marriage of Samba and Duryodhan's daughter. We're going back to report this to Duryodhan. Balaram became very angry. So he took his plow. You've seen the picture. With his plow, he was going to drag the whole city of Hastinapur into the river. And it was happening just with his plow. So they realized, uh-oh, we offended Balaram. Big time. Trouble. So they came out, please forgive us. Here's Samba. Here's Duryodhan's daughter. Here's gifts. He was pacified by their surrendering to him. The Kauravas satisfied him by surrendering unto his divine lotus feet. He was actually the seventh son of Devaki prior to the birth of Krishna, but by the will of the Lord he was transferred to the womb of Rohini to escape the wrath of Kamsa. His other name is therefore Sankarshan, who is the plenary portion of Sri Baladev. Because he is as powerful as Lord Krishna, and he can bestow spiritual power to the devotees, he is therefore known as Baladev. Baladev. In the Vedas, it is also enjoined that no one can know the Supreme Lord without being favored by Baladev. Just like Lord Nityananda is the manifestation of Nityananda Ram. So, Bala means spiritual strength, not physical. Some less intelligent persons interpret Bala as the strength of the body. But no one can have spiritual realization by physical strength. Physical strength ends with the end of this physical body. But spiritual strength follows the spirit soul to the next transmigration. And therefore, the strength obtained by Baladev is never wasted. The strength is eternal. And thus, Baladev is the original spiritual master of all devotees. That's a nice understanding. We require spiritual strength. We require the mercy of Lord Balaram in order to realize Krishna, our relationship with Krishna. Some other things mentioned. Balaram went to school with Krishna. Who was their teacher? Sandipani Muni. How'd you like to go to school with Krishna? Very nice. Along with Krishna, a constant companion in the forest of Vrindavan, he killed many demons. Who are the two principal demons in Vrindavan? I've got your hand up. Anyone else? Okay, go for it. Yes, Balaram. Two demons? Palambasura and Dainukasura. Very good. So, and Dainukasura was killed at the Talavan forest. They wanted the tal fruits. The tal fruits. And Dainuka was jealously guarding his tal forest. Balaram KO'd him, finished him. during the Kurukshetra battle, what was Balaram doing? Huh? Pilgrimage. Yeah. He, Krishna, had decided that he would not fight. So, Balaram couldn't fight. He had to follow Krishna, so he remained neutral. And he tried his best not to bring about the fight, although he was in favor of Duryodhana. But still he remained neutral. Because that would have been a real scene. Krishna's on one side and Balaram's on the other side. Whoa. So Krishna was neutral, Balaram was neutral. When there was a club fight between Duryodhana and Bhimasen, Balaram was present. And when he saw that Bhimasen, under Krishna's indication, because Krishna indicated, bash him in the thigh. You know why bash him in the thigh? You don't know? Huh? I can't. You speak a little louder. What's she saying?
Weakness.
Weakness. You know who is the mother of Duryodhana? Gandhari. And what was Gandhari known for? She had blindfolded herself when she was told that her husband-to-be was blind. So that she would not be in a superior position to her husband, she blindfolded herself so she could not see. So, as she was blind, she had become very powerful by that austerity. And when she understood that her son, Duryodhana, was going into the battle, she made this arrangement that you come stand before me naked, and I'll take off the blindfold, and by my glance upon your body will become invincible. So Duryodhana was preparing to do that, but I forget, Krishna advised that it's not proper you come before your mother naked. You should put a gamsha on your, cover the private parts of your body. So he did. And when Gandhari removed her blindfold, that part of his body was exposed. That part of his body was not exposed. And so Gandhari was very frustrated. Why have you done this? I told you. But Krishna knew that part of his body was vulnerable. And the rest of his body was invincible on the strength of Gandhari's austerities. So if Krishna had indicated, smash him in the thigh. So Bhima smashed him in the thigh. Broke his thigh. And Balaram saw that. He was Balaram angry. He wanted to retaliate the unfair action. Lord Sri Krishna saved Bhima from his wrath. So Balaram left the place at once, being disgusted at Bhimasen. And after his departure, Duryodhana fell to the ground to meet his death. Mentioned here is, I don't know the detail, but Balaram performed the funeral of Abhimanyu. Apparently that was while he was there for some part of the battle. It normally would have been the father, Arjuna, or the brothers of the father, but the Pandavas were too much devastated at the death of Abhimanyu, and so Balaram did it himself, performed the funeral of Abhimanyu. And the last message, at the last stage, he departed from this world. How did Balaram depart this world? You raising your hand? Just scratching your head. Okay. Go ahead.
He went into the ocean.
Well, and then what happened? From his mouth came Anantashesh. And off they went. Zoom, zoom, zoom. to the spiritual world, riding on the back of Anantashesha. A great white snake appeared from his mouth, and thus he was carried by Shesha Nag to the spiritual world. Cool, huh? Can you do that? No one can do that but the personality of Godhead. To be continued. More people came to greet Krishna. Any discussion? Mahabharata narrations don't leave so much questions. Leave one set very satisfied, yeah.
I wonder when you can do that. Like in the Kaliya Dhammalila, Garuda, like he comes to the lake and he eats all the fishes.
He didn't eat all of them, he ate some of them.
Yeah. And so the success, the stage over there, the Muni, he curses Garuda, saying that if you come one more time, you'll die or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And so, I was just wondering, like Garuda, he was personal.
Yeah, how can he be cursed by some puny sage underwater, right? That's your question?
I was thinking, why he would like to eat meat.
Somebody asked me this recently. It's just his, it's his natural, what do you call it? Sustenance. Snakes and fish are food for big birds. Big birds, like they swim over a river or a lake. They see a fish coming to the surface, they swoop down and with their talons they take the fish and off they go. That's their, just their natural prey. So there's no, for us to eat those things, that's prohibited. For a bird to eat those things, that's their natural food. It gets into sometimes these really weird... Somebody asked me once, we have a cat. So what should we feed our cat? Should we feed them vegetarian or should we feed them other than vegetarian? Because the argument is it's their natural food, so it's not wrong. But then, to feed them the other kind of food, how are you going to get it? And you have to... buy it from some anyway. but for Garuda, there's no. It's just his natural food. Yeah.
And what's the role of polygamy? Like in most of the ideal characters, like Rama and Yudhishthira, we just had one wife. And then all the other great characters
had
many wives.
Not all of them, but it was unique, particularly with Ram, Ekapatni Vrata. He had that vow, and he didn't move from that vow. And that's, in one sense, at least as far as showing the position of an ideal king, it's a feature of the ideal king. He's sense-controlled, and he has one queen, one wife. Krishna's leela is exhibiting something else altogether. Krishna's leela is an exhibition of the unlimited reciprocation of love with his devotees. And therefore, Prabhupada would say, why just 16,000, 16 million, 16 zillion? Because he's exhibiting a different feature of the Lord. The unlimited reciprocation of love with his devotees. So, having multiple, it's not only Kshatriyas that would have multiple wives, Brahmanas would also have multiple wives, if, you know, in some cases. So the principle was, for a qualified king at least, to be able to maintain and also to give full protection, just, you know, spiritual protection. So while permitted more than one wife, Prabhupada describes the reason why more than one wife, why polygamy was part of Vedic culture. You want to hear that one? Yes? It's very simple. Prabhupada would say, in general, the injunction is all women are to be married. But the same is not the principle for all men. So there are some men that are not married, but all women are to be married. And numerically, we often find there's more women or more girls than boys. But all women are to be married. So how are they to have a husband without polygamy? A qualified man, not, you know, abusively, but a qualified husband who can give proper protection, can have more than one wife. For that reason, so they're properly protected. And some men can go on remaining brahmachari and sannyas and so on. But that's not the same position for women. Women are to be protected, and therefore by their father, by their husband, and by their grown children in their older age. It's a principle of protection. Principles of protection, when distorted in Kali Yuga, can become principles of exploitation. But that's the principle of protection, done properly.
How would you explain Draupadi's situation?
Very unique. It's described in Mahabharata. When Draupadi was brought before Kunti by Arjuna, because they were off attending the Swayamvar and came back, they were outside the cottage where Kunti was staying. Mother, we have good news. Arjuna has something wonderful to show you, some special gift and reward. Kunti said, very well, whatever it is, you should share it amongst the five brothers. And it wasn't an it was a her. But the utterance of Kunti had been made, and so the Pandavas were bewildered what to do. Kunti has said like this. We can't go against the word of our mother. So they took it to Vyasadeva. You know, what do we do? Because he was advising them. Vyasadeva explained that in her previous life, he gave blessings. He said in a previous life, Draupadi was undergoing great austerities in order to have a qualified husband. And she was worshipping Lord Shiva. And in the course of her worship, suddenly Lord Shiva appeared, and she said five times, may I have a good husband, may I have a good husband, may I have a good husband. And then Lord Shiva smiled and said, you'll not only have one husband, you'll have five husbands. And it's quite okay. This is my blessing. So Vyas referred to that and said, normally this is not the case, but it's the blessing of Lord Shiva, so it is meant to be like that. So it was accepted. It's not to be imitated, but it was a unique arrangement. And she was a uniquely qualified person. When the queens of Dwaraka had met at Kurukshetra at the time of the solar eclipse, they were, Satyabhama in particular, was asking Draupadi, how do you do it? How do you satisfy five husbands? Do you put something in their food, or what do you do? And so her reply is very wonderful. It's how a wife can satisfy a husband. Very, very nice explanation of how she just serves with. She said, I rise before they all rise, and I take rest after they've all taken rest, and I prepare foods for them and take only after they've eaten. And you know, she just describes in detail. She just serves them with such expertise. They're fully satisfied. And so the wife's role, from Draupadi Uvacha. Unique, not to be imitated. Yes.
Why is Balaram always spelling Duryodhana?
It's a mystery. It's part of Krishna's Leela. He's a Supreme Personality of Godhead, omniscient. So he certainly knows the nature of Duryodhana. But at the same time, in a deeper level, he understands the Leela of the Lord, and he's serving the Leela of the Lord. So why the Lord wants to have that Leela? You have to ask the Lord. So, you know, there's intrigue and excitement and tension in that Leela. But there's no interest in Balaram other than serving the interests of Krishna. So you can say the so-called partiality of Balaram. The partiality of Balaram, he was partial. He wanted his sister to marry Duryodhana. Yuck. But it wasn't meant to be, because it was Krishna's plan that this other thing would happen. Yes.
Why was Abhimanyu like killed in such a cruel way? Was it a curse from his previous birth?
I don't know. I'm not a real buff in Mahabharata. There's probably something, but I don't know.
Maharaj, the residents who are assisting Krishna are in the final stages of devotion, Maharaj? Like, demigods who took birth and assisting Krishna.
There's no indication like that. That to have Krishna's association is not ordinary. Krishna was reciprocating with their desire to serve him, because service as a demigod is this more remote kind of service. This was more direct and an immediate kind of service, and elevating and purifying for them. So the indication might be that would be their last, but there's no confirmation specifically like that. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah.